It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We will no longer be the foolish people. We will no longer be the stupid people that get taken care of so badly by our politicians. I think that with few exceptions, no president has done anywhere near what we've done in his first 6 months. Not even close. We're now one step closer to liberating our citizens from this Obamacare nightmare. And delivering great health care for the American people. One by one, we're finding the illegal gang members, drug dealers, thieves, robbers, criminals, and killers. And we're sending them the hell back home where they came from. These are the animals that we've been protecting for so long. Well, they're not being protected any longer. We're building that wall. And walls do work. We have the highest taxes anywhere in the world. And this will really bring them down to one of the lowest. And we really have no choice. We will have growth. We will have everything that we've dreamed of having. It's time to let Americans keep more of their own money. I'd ask whether or not you think I will someday be on Mount Rushmore. If I did it, joking, totally joking, having fun, the fake news media will say he believes he should be on Mount Rushmore. So I won't say it, okay? I won't say it. But every president, they'll say it anyway, you watch tomorrow. Trump thinks he should be on Mount Rushmore. Isn't that terrible? What a group. What a dishonest group.
All right, that was President Donald Trump last night in Youngstown, Ohio. You know, Youngstown, Ohio is an area that did not go for Donald Trump. That was an area of Ohio that did not go for him, and yet the crowds were amazing. I think they had to add 2,000 seats on the floor last night, and it was, I watched a fair amount of it, and it was, you know, it was vintage Donald Trump on the campaign trail. It's encouraging, it's exciting to hear something positive, to hear a vision cast of America that is gives us something to look forward to. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. And I have to say, you know, much of what he said last night in terms of fighting the MS-13 gangs and the borders being sealed, not sealed, but at least the people are not coming like they were. The border crossings, the illegal border crossings are way, way down. I thought of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, of course, because he's been on the forefront of that, doing everything he can. So he talked about, the president talked about stopping sanctuary cities. That's something that General Sessions is very vested in. And so you have to know that lots of people have weighed in on behalf of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, including our own Tim Wildman, Tony Perkins. Lots of senators have expressed, and lots of other people, just tons of people, expressing their support for Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And just this morning, we're hearing that General Sessions is expecting now to announce some let's say probes into the leaks in the national security agencies, which is what one of the things that President Trump has said he's very frustrated that hasn't happened. And so, you know, I guess I'm hoping, just telling you personally, that I'm hoping that this will neutralize and that maybe we'll wake General Sessions up too. And maybe the Senate needs, you know, an electric shock to get their act together and start whatever they have to do to get staff for General Sessions and the others. I have another story this morning that's relevant to this, but let's just talk about the Justice Department. Get their act together and give General Sessions the help he needs. If he can't, you know, if he doesn't proceed and make choices in the future, if there's a collision of goals, or and then that's a different thing. But he has to have staff, in order to do what he needs to do. So anyway, I'm not saying the rift is over. I'm just telling you that's what I'm hoping. Personally, I'm expressing my personal views on that, not any inside information. Now, of course, we know that the Senate is, from their perspective, slugging it away, working hard for them, I have to say. Working hard for the Senate, because that's usually not what they do. And I actually think I'm going to let Mike Emanuel kind of spell out the details. It's very, very confusing. But let's listen to Mike.
On this vote, the yeas are 50 and the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative and the motion is agreed to.
With no room for error, Vice President Mike Pence broke the tie, allowing the Republican health care reform effort to pass its first procedural hurdle. It was that close because moderate Republicans Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski voted against taking up the issue. President Trump reacted in the Rose Garden.
We had two Republicans that went against us, which is very sad. I believe now we will, over the next week or two, come up with a plan that's going to be really, really wonderful for the American people.
Arizona Senator John McCain returned from his own health care battle with brain cancer to help GOP leadership get to 50 votes.
Mr. McCain.
He received a heroic welcome back and then noted there's still plenty of difficult work ahead.
Our health care insurance system is a mess. We all know it. Those who support Obamacare and those who oppose it. Something has to be done. We Republicans have looked for a way to end it and replace it with something else without paying a terrible political price. We haven't found it yet, and I'm not sure we will.
Sources say one idea that has been floated by GOP leaders to Republican senators is passing a so-called skinny bill. It would be limited to repealing the Obamacare's individual and employer mandates and the medical device tax. And then the measure would go to conference to cut a deal with the House. After the procedural vote, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell pledged to keep working to get there and noted Democrats struggled with passing Obamacare.
We watched a similar process 7 years ago. They had a lot of differences. We're going to sort this out in a thoroughly open amendment process in a situation where 51 votes can change the bill.
All right. So they did vote at least to talk about it in spite of Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. You know, I just heard last night, I think it's in Alaska, where the premiums for Obamacare have gone up by 200%. I think that was the number. It might be 100%. I'm not sure, so don't quote me. That's from memory and some passing thing that I heard. But I know that it's way, way up. So here she is. She doesn't even want to vote on talking about it. So she was one of the two. And, of course, if Senator McCain had not flown in, they would not have been able to even go on to debate. And I guess because it's reconciliation, they didn't need 60 votes. And yet, let me tell you that they still need 60 votes for certain things. The rules are so convoluted. I am inept. I can't. There's no way. I'll tell you, I got a note from the Senate last night. And here's what one of the sentences, one of the phrases says. Motion to waive a point of order related to Amendment 271. If 60 votes not achieved, the Hyde protections on the tax credits would be stricken as violating the Byrd rule. That's just one tiny little thing. My point is, yeah, what? What did they just say? Only they understand all of their rules. And so it's going to be what some are calling a votorama the next few days, where they're going to have this unlimited amounts of amendments. But they're going to be voting. They voted for Senator Ted Cruz's suggestion or amendment that was going to kind of open up the market, and it didn't pass. I think it had to have 60 votes. Why? I don't know. But it had to have 60 votes. It did not pass. Then if they're going to be voting on the House version of the health care bill, they're going to be voting on the repeal bill from 2015. So you see how this goes, and some parts of it can be voted on and some can't, depending on whether it's covered by the Byrd rule. The parliamentarian, you know, they give her full sway, the Obama appointee, you know, go figure. So, but I, you know, at least they're going through the motions of doing something. Senator McCain made a very emotional speech on the floor, and I, you know, I have to give it to him, really. I do. Look, he had this scar. He's just had surgery. I mean, it takes a lot of courage to do that. But as always, Senator McCain is a mixed blessing, and much of it is not, I don't think it's good. He's very confused. I've always felt that way. He starts out with a really great statement. Make no mistake, my service here is the most important job I've had in my life. I'm so grateful to the people of Arizona for the privilege, for the honor of serving here, and the opportunities it gives me to play a small role in the history of the country I love. But they knew that however sharp and heartfelt their disputes, however keen their ambitions, they had an obligation, he's speaking of the Senate now, to work collaboratively to ensure the Senate discharged its constitutional responsibilities effectively. And then he goes on to his theme, which is always working in bipartisan way. And this is where I have a big problem. I mean, it's not that I don't believe it should work in a bipartisan way. It's just that the reality of what we're dealing with is the far left, people who hate this country versus people who are trying to save it. And then the people in between who seem to be trying to feather their own nests and don't care which way it goes down. So I don't think the world is what Senator McCain describes. And this is just another example. I'll drop this in just to show you what he really thinks. This is how he feels. This is clip 5.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them. They don't want anything done for the public good. Our incapacity is their livelihood. Let's trust each other. Let's return to regular order. We've been spinning our wheels on too many important issues because we keep trying to find a way to win without help from across the aisle. That's an approach that's been employed by both sides, mandating legislation from the top down without any support from the other side, with all the parliamentary maneuvers that requires. We're getting nothing done, my friends. We're getting nothing done. And all we've really done this year is confirm Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court.
All right, so that, I mean, see, so parts of that are true. This is the problem. This is what I find with confused thinkers, and that's why I'm not going to fill in the blanks, but you just have to make sure that then it gets to the point where you can't understand or listen to anything they say because if you're not knowledgeable on the issues, you are persuaded by the whole thing. He doesn't think clearly, and he says, stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and internet to blank with them. They don't want anything done for the public good. Well, you and I both know that's not true. Maybe true of some people, a lot of people, but it's certainly not true in general. And I have to say, John McCain has been out on television as much as any senator serving the Senate. So I guess he's talking about himself too. And so he sets about a false premise, but I believe he really believes it. I think he's just confused. And that's why he makes such terrible decisions over and over again. And he thinks the solution, of course, is for a compromise between Republicans and Democrats. That's the ticket, and then they can actually get something done. I don't agree with that. All right, there's so much to tell you this morning. What else is new? Let's see. In the few seconds I have here, let me tell you about this. A lot of things are happening inside the White House right now. We talked about Anthony Scaramucci, the new communications director. Boy, he really has been busy. First of all, he demanded an apology from that journalist who said a terrible thing about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, about her appearance. I was waiting for that to happen, just something really offensive. And Scaramucci demanded his apology, and within an hour and a half, he had it. And then Scaramucci has now fired suspected leaker Michael Short. Who's Michael Short? He was an ally of White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus and former Press Secretary Sean Spicer. See, a lot of things were going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Michael Short was working on the Trump campaign, brought in by Priebus, and he absolutely bailed, just disappeared, and let his team down. And then when Donald Trump was elected, Reince Priebus brought him back into the White House. He's connected with Katie Walsh, who was a person who was already let go a few months ago because she's such a bad leaker. I heard that from private sources. So he has been fired unceremoniously. And as my understanding is, Scaramucci plans to fire anybody. They cross the line, they're out of there, and he finds out anybody's leaking, he's going to get rid of them. And he's bringing in all kinds of people from the business world and also conservative pundits to be part of the communications team. Should be interesting. So that's just one bit of news, but there's more. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Truth Be Told with Nate Kellum, Chief Counsel at the Center for Religious Expression.
Congress is poised to pass a bill repealing Obamacare and defunding Planned Parenthood. After the House of Representatives passed the bill, the Senate put together their version, and it appears that it will be passed by a narrow margin. Obamacare has been used to force Christian businesses and ministries to fund abortions against their consciences, and Planned Parenthood has been caught violating federal law by selling baby body parts on the black market. It's time for our elected leaders to stop using taxpayer money for facilitating the murder of unborn children. Please join us in praying the Senate will pass this necessary bill into law. Enough is enough.
Truth Be Told from the Center for Religious Expression, clearing the path for truth. Hear more at CRELaw.org, CRELaw.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Controversy continues to swirl around President Trump's speech at the National Scout Jamboree in West Virginia. Liberals likened the speech to Hitler and the Nazis, but I suspect that's because the Boy Scouts cheered President Trump and booed President Obama. The rank and file loved his remarks, cheering and chanting his name. But the grown-ups, the adults who run the Boy Scouts, are not so happy, releasing a statement that was a bit of a hit on the president's speech. Beforehand, scouts were told they could not chant phrases like "build the wall" or "lock her up." Scout leaders said the phrases might cause friction and division. Now, I find that interesting that the Boy Scouts are suddenly worried about causing division. That's exactly what they did when they capitulated on their core values and sacrificed their honor for the sake of political expedience and political correctness. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
But good evening. Just minutes ago, Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz fired Imran Awan, a Pakistani-born IT technician who has worked with several family members to perform computer services for Wasserman Schultz and other leading Democratic lawmakers. Awan was arraigned on one count of bank fraud charges in U.S. District Court here in Washington today, following his arrest last night at Dulles International Airport prior to boarding an overseas flight. He pleaded not guilty and was released under strict monitoring. Awan's started working for Wasserman Schultz in 2005. She, of course, was forced to resign as chair of the Democratic National Committee 1 year ago after WikiLeaks began posting her hacked emails online. In all, the Daily Caller reports that Awan, his brothers, their wives, and others collected at least $4 million for IT services performed for Democratic lawmakers. In addition to Wasserman Schultz, these included Diana DeGette of Colorado, chair of an investigation subcommittee, Jackie Speer of California, who sits on the Intelligence Committee, and Ted Deutch, ranking Democrat on the House Ethics Committee. The investigation started with allegations that the Awan Group was engaged in double billing, but then reportedly expanded to include how sensitive House data was stored. The group was barred from House computer networks in February when U.S. Capitol Police identified them as suspects in a criminal investigation. In announcing today's firing, Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz said, and I quote, Mr. Awan previously served as a part-time employee, but his services have been terminated. No charges, evidence, or findings from the investigation have been formally shared with our office, so we cannot comment on them. The Daily Caller has reported that authorities seized smashed computer drives from Awan's residence. Charging documents released today, however, do not explicitly link this bank fraud charge to the House IT case, Brett.
All right, that's James Rosen on Fox. This is a story that I've told you before, but it's been a while, and it hasn't been in the news much, and so you probably, most people would say, that's not important. And yet, even James probably, to me, did not capture the essence of this. This is a Pakistani IT worker who's been working in the House for a long time now. Debbie Wasserman Schultz was the head of the DNC. She hired them. They made, collectively, $4 million in taxpayer salaries since 2009. In fact, part of the arrest at he was escaping because the FBI is now investigating Imran Irwan. It's him and his brothers, his wife. His wife's already gone. So he was escaping, and he had wire transferred something like $283,000 from the Federal Credit Union to Pakistan. And so it's, but it's not just bank fraud. It's the fact that Imran had access to all of the, well, let's just say, we don't know the scope of it, to incredible amounts of private information because of his access to email. He had access to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. By the way, she was, remember, she was so deeply involved in the campaign. She had everything, every secret known to the DNC he would have access to. And some have even said, you know, he could, maybe he was the leaker. How would I know? But it's not impossible. And because he had passwords and all kinds of things, he had access to schedules for congressmen and their personal stuff. It's, and also, as you, James said this in passing, he had access to the information of the Intelligence Committee and the House, all their email and exchanges. And so this is who we're talking about, Imran Awan. And then, ironically, I just found out this morning, and you're not going to hear this, you'll probably hear this later in the news. This just came out this morning. 2 years ago on CNN, Imran Awan wrote an article for CNN titled, Opinion, The Muslims Are Coming. Why Islamophobia is so dangerous. And he goes out, you know, on to sort of mock Americans for their fear of Muslims and how terrible it is that they're portrayed so negatively. How ironic. How ironic. And it appeared in CNN. How also ironic. All right, so that's a big story today. Whether you hear it or not, it's a big story. And, of course, more big stories happened yesterday because there was a testimony on the so-called Russian connection between the Trump campaign, and Catherine Herridge tells us about it. Let's listen.
The Senate Judiciary leadership issued a subpoena for Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign chairman, less than 24 hours before a highly anticipated public hearing.
We want Manafort to come, like we want Trump Jr. to come. We're willing to give all sorts of accommodations, but we can't mess around with back and forth and playing off one committee against another.
As Grassley spoke to reporters, Manafort met behind closed doors with Senate Intelligence Committee staffers answering their questions. The Judiciary Committee senior Democrat Dianne Feinstein said Manafort was only willing to provide a single transcribed interview to Congress, and it would not be available to her investigators. Another Democrat said hardball tactics may be in order to learn more about a Trump Tower session with a Russian lawyer and others.
I'm convinced that subpoenas will be necessary for Paul Manafort, as well as for Donald Trump Jr. and for everyone who participated in that June 9th, 2016 meeting.
A source close to the congressional talk said former journalist Glenn Simpson, whose company Fusion GPS was behind the unverified salacious anti-Trump dossier compiled by a former British spy, is now cooperating with investigators, and a congressional subpoena was withdrawn for Wednesday's Senate hearing.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
The president's son-in-law was back on Capitol Hill for a second day. spending 3 hours behind closed doors with House Intelligence Committee lawmakers.
It was a very productive session. We had an opportunity to ask about a range of issues that the committee has been concerned about.
I found him to be straightforward, forthcoming, wanted to answer every question that we had.
On Twitter, the president seemed to mock the congressional Russia probes, writing his youngest son could be called as a witness. Jared Kushner did very well yesterday in proving he did not collude with the Russians. Witch hunt. Next up, 11-year-old Barron Trump.
And late today, a source familiar with the matter told Fox News that the Manafort subpoena has been withdrawn, and separately in the last few minutes, Senator Dianne Feinstein has told Fox News that Manafort and Donald Trump Jr. will not be appearing tomorrow at the public hearing. They're looking for a date on the calendar in September. In the meantime, the senator said they're trying to get all of the records from both witnesses before they question them.
Okay, so thank you, Catherine Herridge from Fox. My understanding is that Jared Kushner and Don Trump Jr. both knocked it out of the ballpark. That's what that was. Just a few. Catherine gave you a few comments on their appearance, but I heard from other sources that they answered everything. I heard that Jared Kushner actually went overtime, answered all the inane questions from this person's perspective. That the when the Democrats ran out of bad questions, he kept answering them, and so we just hope the problem is. I'm confident that was done in good faith, meaning that Jared Kushner and Don Trump Jr. were testifying in good faith. I'm not so sure that the good faith goes the other way. And I'm sure that anything that they say can easily be used to trip them up in the future. I don't think that this means they're out of danger. I think in terms of the public perception, we see they went forward. They told everything they knew. As far as we know at this point, no reason to believe they didn't. And so they're being very transparent. I think that resonates with Americans. But, of course, that because we have so many evil people trying to destroy this president and his family and the agenda, hating the rally that they saw last night, hating, you know, what normal people look and act like, and really dying to just stop this populist movement. That's what they would call it in America. Don't think that they're going to stop. Don't think they're going to say, oh, well, that's it. Because we know that Bob Mueller is Robert Mueller, the special counsel, as we talked with our guest yesterday, the professor from Cornell, has absolutely packed his team with Democratic partisans, big money donors to the Hillary and Obama campaigns, and they're out to prove they're, you know, what does he say? They're a posse in search of a crime. And so I don't think they're going to keep turning things over, and they'll use anything they can, including misstatements or mix-ups, trips in a congressional hearing. And speaking of that, you know, I've wondered why Paul Ryan has been so quiet. Anybody wonder about that? You know, he's supposed to be like the Speaker of the House. Doesn't that mean, wouldn't you think that would mean that he would be speaking out about things? But no, because you see, Paul Ryan is probably hoping of all hope that Donald Trump will fail. That's my editorial assessment. I believe it's true. And he was on a radio interview in Wisconsin just this week, and he said he defended Bob Mueller. He said he's anything but a partisan. Remember, Bob Mueller is a Republican who was appointed by a Republican who served in the Republican administration, who crossed over and stayed on till his team ended. That's what Ryan said. I don't think many people are saying Bob Mueller is a biased partisan. He's really sort of anything but. Really? So that's Paul Ryan for. That's our champion in the House. That's your speaker, the one that, you know, he's cute. He's got kids. He's young. He's fit. He's winsome. He's got big blue eyes. But he does some really bad things, could I say? Not the least of which is just does not give leadership. Except he does give leadership, like on the transgender issue. Transgenders in the military and funding, you know, sex change operations and hormone treatments. Nothing from him, you know. It went through in the House because he didn't do a thing to stop it. So just saying, if you waver and you see him speaking and you think, oh, he just seems so nice. You know, it isn't really about being nice. I think I say that at the top of this show every day, don't I? It really isn't about that at all. It's actually what you do, not what you say. I think that's why a lot of people defend President Trump. It's what he does, not what he says. And we're seeing many, many good things that he's doing. Sometimes we're willing to forgive the statements. And so We see what Paul Ryan is doing, and it's precious little. We see what Mitch McConnell has done. It's precious little. You heard it from John McCain's mouth. The only thing we've done is confirm Neil Gorsuch. That's true. That's just about the only thing they've done since Trump has been elected. You think that's an accident? Okay. But one thing, really good. This is encouraging. Conservatives in the House, including Representatives Matt Gaetz from Florida, Andy Biggs from Arizona, Mike Johnson from Louisiana, and Jim Jordan from Ohio, have drafted an amendment that would compel government cooperation with a congressional probe into Loretta Lynch and James Comey and their deeds toward the end of the term, where Mrs. Lynch instructed James Comey to call the Clinton investigation a matter. Don't use that nasty term, investigation, because that gives an impression. Just call it a matter. And he dutifully complied. And there are lots of other things. I'm sure that that's just the tip of the iceberg. When Loretta Lynch agreed to meet with Bill Clinton on the tarmac at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix, that's a problem, ladies and gentlemen. When she's investigating his wife, it's a bit of a problem. So they're going to open an invest. They want to open an investigation on that. And God bless them for doing that. That leads me to a couple of other stories here. In testimony, you heard, as I've spoken almost every day, I've talked about this, I've talked about it a lot, the Fusion GPS, the company that prepared that phony dossier, the salacious dossier. Glenn Simpson decided he was going to plead the fifth. I'm not sure where that, I think they've subpoenaed him, and I think he's going to be testifying maybe today, but he's not the only person testifying on this. There's a gentleman named Thor Halvorsen, who is the founder and CEO of the Human Rights Foundation, and I have actually in my hand his testimony that he's going to give today before the United States Senate Committee on the Judiciary. I didn't actually even have a chance to read it all myself, but basically his testimony says that Fusion GPS has been involved in silencing American media on to try to protect Maduro's presidency in Venezuela. So Fusion GPS has been providing salacious, I guess he would probably say phony salacious information, trying to stop people from stopping Maduro. So Fusion GPS has been working with to protect the Maduro presidency, and also then has been working with, we're going to try to find out, I surely would like to. We want to know who funded this salacious portfolio on Donald Trump. Who did that? And what is the that is probably one of the most interesting stories of this. Talk about corruption. And so the Senate committee is going to be hearing, Committee on the Judiciary will be hearing from, at least from Thor Halvorsen today, and I'm sure that will be very interesting when we hear the rest of it. And I shared with you quite a lengthy story earlier this week. In fact, we should put this on our Facebook page again. It's an article by Adam Credo, and the title is Top Dems Slow Rolling Ethics Probe to Delay Investigation into Obama Leaks. And this was the story that I repeated to you. Remember, Devin Nunes, the Republican, is head of the House Intelligence Committee. And once he went to the basement of the White House and saw what he saw about leaks and information about the Trump family, he was just pretty shell-shocked. He did a press conference outside the White House. Immediately, ethics charges were brought against him, and the ethics charges were brought against him by MoveOn.org. And so he has been silenced all this time. And the Republicans, in an effort to show that they were bipartisan, in the words of John McCain, and fair-minded, cooperated with this effort to bring Devin Nunes, just to make sure everything was right before they moved ahead, and the Democrats promised that they would do it quickly. But, oh, not so much, because they've done nothing, and Devin Nunes is still silenced by these ethics charges. Meanwhile, Adam Schiff, the minority leader on that committee, has done 123 national television interviews bashing, creating this impression that there's a Russian collusion. 14 hours, 8 minutes, and 55 seconds since Trump was inaugurated. That's where how many times you've seen Adam Schiff. Mark Warner, by the way, has done 60 interviews totaling 5 hours, 55 minutes, and 13 seconds, all of them trying to smear President Trump and create this impression that something's going on with the Russians. They're doing their job. You know, if they're on the clock, they must be doing very well. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. After fighting nearly 9 months, Iraq's U.S.-backed forces were able to smash ISIS in Mosul and retake the Iraqi city. The former de facto capital of the so-called ISIS caliphate has now been recaptured by U.S.-backed forces. Can you imagine how widespread celebration of this news would boost the hearts and minds of the American people and our allies around the world? The talking snake American media is so determined to attack President Trump that they'll bury real news to do it.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Christian apologist Frank Turek.
75% of young people walk away from the church once they leave the home, and one of the major reasons is they don't know why Christianity's true.
Join Frank Turek and others at Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics, October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Witness live debate and the premiere of American Family Association's documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
At some point or another, everyone wonders about their purpose in life. So, have you discovered yours, or are you still searching? Wednesday on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress describes our God-given purpose and shares how our everyday choices can either make or break our ability to fulfill that purpose. Join us Wednesday for Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Pathway to Victory. Each weekday morning at 6 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump has signaled recently both that he has lost confidence in Attorney General Jeff Sessions and that he holds Mr. Sessions in high regard. Which is it? Jeff Sessions deserves the president's affection and confidence. He is quite simply the best member of the Trump cabinet. He's the most loyal and the one most successfully implementing the president's agenda. Consequently, Mr. Trump must not terminate Mr. Sessions' tenure as AG at this juncture. That would simply create an opening at justice that would be filled temporarily by Rod Rosenstein, the source of the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller that has the president so vexed with General Sessions. Any real successor will inevitably be hung up by Senate Democrats for months. Donald Trump supporters want and expect Jeff Sessions to be kept on the job, not wrongfully put out to pasture. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'd like to know how Capitol Police handle equipment that belongs to a member or a staffer that's been lost within the Capitol complex and found or recovered by one of your officers. What happens?
Sure. Well, it's processed on a what's called a PD-81, which is a property record. And depending on the property, depending on how it's, if you can legitimately determine ownership, then it's generally turned back over to the owner of the property. If it's part of of an ongoing case, then there are other things that have to occur for that to happen.
So if a member says that they have equipment that's been lost and you find it, it would be returned to the member?
In the general sense, yes.
If the equipment belongs to the member, it has been lost, they say it's been lost and it's been identified as that member's, then the Capitol Police is supposed to return it, correct?
Well, it's not a, I can't give a yes or no answer on that because I know.
It's a simple yes or no answer. If you if a member loses equipment,
yes, ma'am,
and it is found by the Capitol Police or your staff, and it is identified as that member's equipment, and the member is not associated with any case, and that is their equipment, it is supposed to be returned, yes or no?
Depends on the circumstances. And if the circumstances are...
I don't understand how that's possible. Members' equipment is members' equipment. Under my understanding, the Capitol Police is not able to confiscate members' equipment when the member is not under investigation. It is their equipment, and it's supposed to be returned.
Well, I think there's extenuating circumstances in this case, and I think that, you know, working through my counsel and the necessary personnel, if that in fact is the case, and with the permission of through the investigation, then we'll return the equipment. But until that's accomplished, I can't return the equipment.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences.
All right. What was that? Well, we played that for you in the spring. Man, I look at the dates on these things and I think it seems like so long ago, but that, I think that was May. And that was Debbie Wasserman Schultz grilling the chief of the Capitol Police because they had taken her laptop in pursuit of investigating this Imran Iwan and his family, the Pakistani IT workers who took $4 million in salaries. If you see their salaries broken down, you compare them to other people working in the House, it's just incredible the amount of money that they were paid. So then there was insiders on Capitol Hill were warning about this some months ago, saying that this guy had access to all the intelligence information for the Intelligence Committee in the House, had access to all the DNC email that Debbie Wasserman Schultz would have on her email. Some were saying he could have possibly, his family could have possibly been the source of the leaks of those email. And so Debbie Wasserman Schultz had a laptop. The Capitol Police took it and would not give it back to her because it had reached critical mass. This is a very important investigation. By the way, she was refusing to fire Imran Iwan and his family. I think a couple of them left, but she would not fire them. She verbally defended them, but she just dug her heels in and left them on the payroll. So this went on for a long time. It seems like a long time. It's the end of July. So now Imran Iwan has been arrested. The FBI now is investigating him. Evidently, he got word of that. They arrested him at the airport trying to escape. But you see that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, whose committee at that time was charged with funding the Capitol Police, she's threatening the chief of police for the Capitol Police in that interview. At the very last there, she said there will be consequences. And so he stood by his guns. He stuck to his guns, this chief of the Capitol Police. But you see, that just kind of helps you to understand how important this case really and truly is. I have lots to tell you about other things going on Capitol Hill. I mentioned earlier this whole thing about Anthony Scaramucci firing Michael Short. And I want to go back to that. Michael Short was part of the communications team. You and I have never heard of his name. I haven't. He was very close to Reince Priebus and also to Sean Spicer. He worked on the RNC team. But he, according to several sources, was the leaker. And according to other sources, he was still connected with a woman who was fired, let go several months ago, who was also closely connected to Reince Priebus. I'm trying to find her name. Because she was leaking. I heard from other journalists, everyone knows she leaks everything. You can't trust her with anything. But she was in the White House in the initial at least month or two, I don't know how long, and they finally let her go, but they left this guy, Michael Short. And by the way, it's a Reince Priebus right-hand man and Sean Spicer. And I think maybe that helps us to understand why Sean Spicer is out. It also helps us to understand, which I already knew, why Reince Priebus should be gone. Because the West Wing is filled with people not loyal to President Trump. They are more loyal to maybe Paul Ryan, the establishment, Kevin McCarthy, more in that camp, so eager to find anything that they can leak to damage the president. So Anthony Scaramucci is going to be, the hammer's coming down, and I'm grateful. And I actually think the hammer should come down on Reince Priebus. I've thought that for a long time. I don't even know why he survived the way he has from some of the inside information that I've received. It's just he's been in charge overseeing hiring, not just of the press office, but everything. And I know for a fact that resumes have been submitted. I know organizations, very trusted, have spent hours, you know, finding people appropriate for positions, submitted those resumes, and they ended up in the trash can. So if you wonder why things are not getting done, that's one of the reasons they're not getting done. Just look at what Attorney General Sessions said. Yeah, now that's a different issue. His are slow walked in the Congress, but this is the way of preventing President Trump from doing all the things he promised last night in Youngstown, Ohio, that the people want. The people want these things like walls, security, expelling potential Islamic terrorists, financial responsibility. Just industry brought back, free trade, yes, but fair trade to America. And I want to read an article. This is by Adam Credo, and we're going to put this on our Facebook page because it is so crucial. I can't read all of it to you, but it's in the Free Beacon, published just yesterday. The State Department under Secretary Rex Tillerson has been locked in a growing power struggle with the White House that has angered officials in the West Wing and sparked claims that the Trump administration's top diplomatic organ is now in open war with the White House on a range of critical issues, including the Israeli-Palestinian impasse, Iran, the crisis with Qatar, and other matters. The State Department is said to be in a state of massive dysfunction, with top officials working under Tillerson ignoring White House directives on critical staffing issues and key policy matters, including administration allies who are said to be increasingly frustrated with what is perceived as the White House's inability to control its own federal agencies. I'm going to stop just for a second. You've probably heard that Secretary Tillerson took some time off, a couple of days, went back to Texas, and you heard that he was offended by the way the president spoke about Attorney General Sessions. I don't doubt that, but there's a lot more to this, and I hinted at it yesterday, and I have told you before that Tillerson has around him Hillary and Obama people, and he's done this intentionally. But perhaps you didn't realize how deep this goes. So I'm going to go back to this article by Adam Credo and pick it up. The tensions have fueled an outstanding power battle between the West Wing and State Department that has handicapped the administration and resulted in scores of open positions failing to be filled with Trump confidants. This has allowed former Obama administration appointees still at the State Department to continue running the show and formulating policy where they have increasingly clashed with the White House's own agenda. For instance, and he goes down to give an example, well, you'll remember that we talked about this over the weekend. A Palestinian terrorist broke into a home and murdered three. They were having Shabbat, and they murdered three people, family members in that home, and left a bloody mess. It was just one wielder of the knife, but it was a Palestinian terrorist, upset. And the State Department issued a statement, said it's not clear what motivates such acts. And we talked about this. It's a declaration. Okay, they're trying to, excuse me, I'm going to get back into Israel in just a second, because the statement that they published was basically both sides are at fault. This is what they always say, between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Palestinians, you know, we're not quite sure why this happened, but, you know, they don't generally act out like this. That's basically what the statement said, much more artfully. But let me go back to the article. It's no secret that the State Department is waging an open political war, which includes policy insubordination and press campaigns against the Trump White House. Foggy Bottom is still run. That's what the State Department is the nickname in Washington. Foggy Bottom is still run by the same people who designed and implemented Obama's Middle East agenda. Tillerson was supposed to clean house, but he left half of them in place and he hid the other half in powerful positions all over the building. These are career staffers committed to preventing Trump from reversing what they created. And then it goes on to talk about the agency vacancies that have yet to be filled. The White House is said to have sent many lists of potential candidates for these jobs, but senior aides to Tillerson have ignored the White House and trashed these lists. This has resulted in key State Department positions remaining unfilled, a situation that has only elevated the roles of former Obama administration officials who still work in the department. Those list of candidates literally go nowhere, according to one veteran foreign policy operative. It's like a sham process. And the reason it's not because the White House isn't behaving professionally. It's because Tillerson isn't professional at all. So Tillerson now has begun to hint that he might quit his post. And then they get more specific in this article. There's more detail that I won't get to, but a name, Stuart Jones, acting Assistant Secretary of State for Near East Affairs, is just one example. He is an apologist for the Palestinians, and he is the one that they think was responsible for that erroneous claim that the Palestinian Authority had ceased spending U.S. taxpayer funds to pay terrorists. But that wasn't true, remember? President Trump called that out. Tillerson came out and said, oh no, they've stopped that practice. And then we found out that's not true. They had not stopped the practice. And here it goes back to the article. Tillerson should have spent time and effort working to help the president undo the Iran deal. This is another insider. Instead, he's apparently spending time and effort trying to prevent the president from undoing the Iran deal. And in the meantime, he's elevated the Arabist blank artist, Stuart Jones, to a position of influence in a building. A guy who was perfect for the job in the Obama administration. Another person said tensions between the White House and the State Department go very deep. And then on Iran, you know, the State Department, he was alluding to the fact, you know, they just released a statement. This happened just last week. Again, this stuff happens so quickly and so much of it, it's hard to keep the days straight. But the State Department came out with a statement. Remember saying that Iran was complying with the Iranian deal? And you remember me telling you that there were arguments from Trump in meetings with his, this was just last week, with Tillerson and McMaster, furious that they were going to certify that Iran, they wanted him to certify that Iran was in compliance. And so, let me read this last paragraph. On Iran, they refused to lay the groundwork for tearing up the deal. On Qatar, even Obama's holdover ambassador was tweeting criticism of Trump. And on Israel, they say we're going to upgrade U.S. relations with the Palestinians, and won't even condemn Palestinian terror incitement. Even Trump supporters are beginning to worry. What if the president simply can't make the State Department implement his policies? Well, of course, he's going to have to. We knew this from the beginning, that the president needed to appoint good people to these positions. And instead, I think he tried to listen. He tried to be broad-minded because he's not into these issues. You know, look, this is the first time probably in his life he's ever dealt with these complex issues. You cannot walk into the presidency and be an expert on all of foreign policy in every part of the country, every part of the world. Can't do it. I mean, he probably knows, he knows naturally more about finances than he knows about things like this and about the way that Congress works. How is he supposed to know all of that? And so he depends on people that he's appointed, but he's appointed bad people, including Reince Priebus. And he's praised Paul Ryan when he shouldn't have. Paul Ryan was no friend, never has been, and neither is Mitch McConnell. He's made some bad judgments, which actually has surprised me because I thought one of the strong suits of Donald Trump would be that he would know who to hire. We'll see. He's trying to sort things out right now, and we need to pray for him. And I hope that he backs off of General Sessions and leaves the good man alone, the one that's actually accomplishing a great deal in spite of not having any staff. And by the way, John Bolton just tweeted, it's a spin that the permanent federal bureaucracy put out to defend the Iran deal is complete nonsense. So there you go. That's how it's going down on this Wednesday, January. Oh, my goodness. July 26, 2017. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.